So when we were chanting this Gita Dhyanam, there is a line, Ambatvam Anusandhami Bhagavad Gita Bhavat Veshini. So why is the Bhagavad Gita called the mother? Just as in our life, when a child is born, for the first few months, the mother feeds the child with her milk and nourishes and takes care of the entire well-being of the child. And then as the child grows, then slowly she, you know, gives him some semi-solid food, soft food, and then gradually advance to a regular diet till he becomes strong and able to function on his own. And then also how to walk, how to talk, how to eat, how to dress, everything is taught by the mother. And all the well-being of the child is taken care of. So similarly, we worship Mother Gita. Amba Tvam Anu Sandadami, I prostrate to you, I meditate upon you, O Mother Gita. Bhagavad Gita Bhavad Veshini, Bhagavad Gita, who removes all the sorrows of this world, of this existence. So similarly, for a seeker who is just starting on the spiritual path, who is a child, who is a baby, the mother gives suitable teaching based upon his level of understanding, just as a child, depending on his level of maturity, gets the appropriate food and diet and teaching. So the Bhagavad Gita, if you are a beginner, will tell you how to work in the world. What is karma yoga? What is my duty? How I should perform my duty? And how should I deal with others? How should I deal with problems? And so she starts at that level. And then as the seeker's maturity grows, we find that the advanced teachings are also here. Who is God? What does he do? What is this world? How was it created? Why was it created? What is my relationship with this world? What is my relationship with God? And how through the path of love I can reach that Almighty. Not only reach, but how with the path of love I can deal with the world. And what is the true meaning of devotee? Devotee does not only mean one who goes to the temple or church and prays. Yes, that's very good. But the Lord extends it beyond to true devotees, Advaishta Sarva Bhuta Nam Maitra Karuna Evacha. So my true devotee loves all, hates none, because they are all me. Everybody that has appeared on this universe is my form, my appearance. So whether it's a plant, animal, bird, fish, humans, in everybody, my devotee sees me. That's what the Lord tells us. And then slowly he takes us even to the higher knowledge of the Upanishads, where there is only one entity, one substratum, and everything is supported by that, which we call as Atman, or you can call it Brahman, or you can call it the consciousness. So in response to Arjuna's doubts, because he feels that this war is going to result in a lot of killing, a lot of people will die, and I will be responsible for their death. That is Arjuna's confusion and Arjuna's sorrow. That's why the first chapter is called Arjuna Vishad Yoga, because when Arjuna sees the what's going to be the result of this war, he says, I do not want to fight. And Krishna has to tell him at different levels what is his duty, why this war is necessary. As he explained, we have talked before, this was a holy war. It was a war of good versus evil, dharma versus adharma. And so he tells him that it is his duty as a kshatriya to engage in this battle, even though he does not need to. But then some people say Gita is a book of war. It teaches us to fight. It's not. These instructions to Arjuna are situational. At that situation, that was his duty, and that's what Arjuna was required to do. But for you and me, we are not engaged in any battle, in any battlefield, but our life, there is a constant struggle. You know, we always face problems. We always face conflicts. We always face difficulties. Nobody's life is free of problems, free of difficulties. So applying this knowledge will help us to encounter worldly problems with courage, with faith, with determination, and with a smile. That's what Bhagavan Krishna's whole life, you see him, he's always smiling no matter how many problems he encounters. So that is what we have to learn from this. And Sri Krishna starts his teachings at the highest level, that he says that everybody is that one Atma, that one consciousness, the Om. Everybody is that, even though I think myself to be the body, mind, and intellect. And with the body, I perceive the objects. With the mind, I feel the emotions. With the intellect, I think the thoughts. And we represent vasanas or desires, but Om, that consciousness, the Lord's presence within, which here he's calling as Atma, is one. And everybody, our higher nature is that. All of us are that Atma, that consciousness, functioning through this body, mind, and intellect, dealing with the world. And as long as you realize that you, me, and all those kings, Bhagavan tells him, we are all that one, so there is nobody dies. There is no death because the soul, the Atma, the consciousness does not perish. Yes, the body will perish, but that is only my equipment. That is my lower nature. And so this highest teaching of the Upanishads, that there is one Brahman and we are all that. And that is what he is starting his teachings at the highest level. And then slowly he will come down to our and yours and my level, that where we think that, oh, everybody is born, everybody dies. So today we will do the last verse of the highest teaching of the Upanishad, that there is only one Atman, one soul, one consciousness that does not perish. And then we'll come down to the lower level where we think that, yes, everybody is born, everybody dies. Okay, so Bhagavan will address that also. So verse number 25. Avyakto yam achintyo yam avikaryo yam uchyate tasmadevam viditvainam nanushochitum arhasi. So, he is telling us, in the previous two verses, he had talked about this Atma, the consciousness, cannot be destroyed. Fire cannot burn it, weapons cannot cut it, water cannot wet it, air cannot dry it. So, none of the methods of destruction that we know can destroy the Atma. Atom bomb cannot kill it, hydrogen bomb, even neutron bomb, whatever you can think of. None of the methods of destruction, even when a person dies in a car accident or dies of illness, the Atman, the consciousness, is immutable. It does not change. Not only does not perish, but does not change. It is the same. Billions of years ago, God was the same. And even now, he is the same. And even billions of years from now, the Atman, the Brahman, the consciousness, the Father in heaven that we call as the Supreme Consciousness, is unchanged. The worlds may be born and die, and throughout history, as we can see, the worlds are created and then it's destroyed and then another world is created. So this universe is not the first universe. It has been created many times and has perished many times. How many times? We don't know. Because each cycle of creation is 4 billion years, and after the universe ends, there is 4 billion years of darkness, and then again the universe starts. So it is, we don't know how long it has been going on, but it is sanatan, it is eternal, it is ancient. So this Atma, this consciousness that Bhagavan has referred to in the previous verses, he says, it is avyakta. Avyakta means unmanifest. Vyakta means manifest. So indriya gocharam is vyaktam. So indriya gocharam means what my sense organs can see, it is vyaktam. So that means what I can see with my eyes or what I can hear, like this sound I am making, you are not seeing it, but you are listening to it. You are sitting on the chair, so the chair is what you are feeling, or if, you know, if there is any, in the, what we smell or what we eat. So what my sense organs, eyes, ears, skin, tongue, and taste, tell me, that is called indriya gocharam. But this Atma, the consciousness, is indriya agocharam. It is not detected by the senses. It is avyakta. We'll talk a little more about what avyakta means. Avyakta, I am. And then I am is achintya. It cannot be thought of. It cannot be contemplated. This consciousness cannot be thought of. Not only cannot be thought of, cannot even be described. So you say, well, if we cannot be described, then why are we wasting our time? But we'll see how, what are the means of knowledge by which things are known in this world. So we'll talk about that. So it says it is unthinkable and avikarya. It is not modified. It is immutable. And that's what we already talked about, that this consciousness does not go through six modifications. You and I go through that. You know, asti, jayate, vardate, viparinamyate, apakshiyate, and pranashyati. So that means I exist, I am born, I grow. Then after a certain time, we start modifying. The hair changes, the skin changes, the body becomes weaker. And slowly, the body deteriorates, gets sick, and then ultimately, the individual perishes. So these six modifications do not apply to that Atma, the consciousness. So if it is unmanifest, if it cannot be thought of, if it's not modified, if it never perishes, tasmat, therefore, evam vidit vainam, knowing this, having understood clearly, na anushochitum arhasi. Arhasi means you should not, shochitum means mourn, do not grieve, do not have sorrow. And here Bhagavan uses the word anu. Anu means continuously. See, you say, well, there is a death, so should I not mourn? Yes, if somebody perishes, somebody who is close to you passes away, definitely you feel some sorrow. Or if a near and dear one, or say your friends, say mother or somebody passes away, definitely you feel sorrow and you go and, sympathize with them and all. But when he says anu, what he means is continuous, long-standing, ongoing sorrow. Because that's why in our scriptures, they dedicate 13 days as period of mourning. Yes, for 13 days, definitely you miss that individual. But after that, you wish the soul goodbye, because whatever is born is meant to die. There is nobody who in this earth who is going to live forever. Nobody has, nobody ever will. So then you wish the soul goodbye and say, okay, please go on to your journey. As we know, the soul goes through multiple lifetimes, goes, to heaven or hell, depending on its activities, and then takes a suitable body based on its karmas and based on its vasanas. If I have done good karmas, I get a good body. If I have done bad karmas, maybe I get a body of a buffalo or a cockroach or a mosquito. We don't know. So that's why he says anushochanti. And also, as we see in the first chapter, Arjuna is going on and on. He's on and on about why we should not fight, what is the sorrow, why there will be problems, society will be affected. And even in the second chapter, when Bhagavan tells him that, you're saying you are not fighting, but you are a warrior and you are acting like a coward and all that, nothing seems to dissuade him. So that's why he uses the word anu, that get out of this sorrow. It's okay, you have some problems, but get out of it. That's what I'm trying to teach you. So let's talk about unmanifest, avyaktoyam. So what is manifestation? As we said, manifest, something that is manifest is something that I can see with my senses. So the five elements, I can see, but all the five elements you cannot see, but I can see earth. I can see the visible bodies. I can see water. I can see fire. Air I cannot see, but I can feel it. Except if you are in Delhi, then you can also see the air. Or in Mexico City. But in the rest of the world, air I cannot see. How about space? Space I cannot see. Yes, I know there is space between me and the end of this room, or there is space outside. But it is not something that is visible to us. Or can you hear space? Or can you smell space? You can taste space. No. You can smell the air, you can smell the flowers, you can taste the water, but space is cannot see. You cannot see, hear, smell, taste, or touch, but we know it is there. But that consciousness, which is even subtler than space, out of which space was created definitely is not available to my senses. How about feelings? You know, feelings, I can feel my emotions, I can feel my thoughts, I know. But what I am thinking, you don't know. Or what you are thinking, I don't know. Like some of you, you know, are happy here, I'm comfortable. Other one is, you know, when is this class going to end? You know, so when am I going to get lunch? So we are here just for the lunch. Class to theek hai when it finishes. So I don't know, you know, your feelings. But from the expression, sometimes you can tell, okay, this person looks happy. That means he's feeling happy. If he looks sad or he looks angry, then you say, why are you sad? Even though the person is not saying, but from her expressions or from her actions, we can tell. But this consciousness is not even available to the mind to contemplate, for the intellect to think, or the mind to even feel. So none of my senses or none of my equipment, my body, mind, and intellect can detect this Atma, this consciousness. So then they say, who am I? We'll talk about that a little later. But who am I and why is this my true nature? So talking about unmanifest, there was a king in England many years ago who asked his wise people, what is death and what is birth? And so one wise man gave a very beautiful example, which I found very fascinating. So he says, oh, King Majesty, there is a tower, you know, the palace tower. Yes. So there is a light that illumines the tower. Yes. And there is a window on one side. There is a window on the other side to admit the air. He says, yes. So he says, imagine it's not yet fully dark. It's just turning a little bit dark and you have put on the light. But a swallow is returning to her home, a bird, so to visit, you know, go back to her children. So what she does, she flies. Instead of going around the tower, she goes through one window and out the other window and is gone. So where she came from, it's already dark. But the room, the tower is lit. So for a while, you don't see the swallow because it is dark. Then she appears in the light. And then disappears again into the darkness. So from where she came is dark. Where she is, there is light. And then off into the darkness again. So this spirituality, this knowledge tells us, see, for us, you and me, all we see is this world. Okay, this I can see. So for me, that alone exists. So for us, this world alone is real. And what I can see, hear, smell, taste, and touch is real. But for the rishis or the great prophets, they knew that there is a world from which we all appeared, and when it ends, we will go back to that unmanifest state. So I was unmanifest first, I appeared and then became unmanifest. So this manifest is the visible world we see, but the unmanifest is this zone of Om or Atman or Brahman or consciousness, which to you and me is not visible, but the great rishis, that's why in the Bhagavad Dhyana, Gita Dhyanam, it says that in their deep meditation, Pashyanti Yam Yoginaha, in their meditation, they are able to see, not see directly, but experience or through their intellect or through their consciousness, become one with that. And they realize that. So that is for you and me also. We can also do that. We can also meditate, we can make our mind silence and experience that unmanifest state. And the unmanifest and manifest, Gurudev in his commentary talks about the mango seed. So he says that there is a mango seed you plant in the ground. Now the tree has not yet appeared, so the tree is unmanifest. It is there in the seed, but it is unmanifest. And with the right amount of water, fertilizers, nutrition, when it is given, slowly that seed has a little sprout, a small little plant comes out. And you know that, yes, this plant has the potential to become a mango seed. So that's why in physics, they talk about potential energy, right? Potential energy and then the visible energy. I'm not a physics scholar, but those who are engineers probably can, I'm sure they know that. So they talk about potential energy. So similarly, there is a potential to become a mango tree. So slowly the plant comes out and you protect it because you don't want, you know, some a goat or some animal come and eat it. So you put a little fence around it and slowly the tree grows bigger and bigger. Once it becomes strong, a firm root and a firm trunk, then you leave, take out the protection. So you and me, we all have this God seed in us. Just as a mango has a mango seed, we all have the God seed, the Om, the consciousness. And it is unmanifest right now. But if you look at a saint, if you are in the presence of a saint or a prophet, you can clearly see that the God seed has manifested in this individual. So for you and me also, our goal should be to manifest the divinity that is hidden in us. And how do we do that? When you're on the spiritual path, as we said, slowly this knowledge comes up. And what is the nourishment? Just as the nourishment for the plant is water and fertilizer, for us, nourishment is the teaching of the scriptures. So learning the scriptures and then praying and meditating. So with the body I serve, with the mind I love, with the intellect I know. So this love and knowledge are the two fertilizers which increase the divinity in me. The Lord's presence in me becomes stronger as I know the Lord's presence, as I love the Lord, as I come to know. So slowly that plant grows, but initially it needs to be protected. That's why when we are on the spiritual path, in the beginning, our desire is not that strong. Okay, you know, today I'm busy, I don't feel like going to Gita class, I overslept, or I need to go shopping, or but then slowly as we start enjoying it, then we say, no, I must not only go, but I must read on my own. So every day in the evening, I pick up the book and read because I want to know more and more. Who is this God that has created me? Why am I here? What is my purpose? So slowly that God seed becomes stronger as it is nourished by the knowledge. And then after that, whether there is any teacher or not, whether there is guru or not, I am ready. I can proceed. So slowly this knowledge becomes so firm in us that then I say, okay, this is my only goal in life. Just as the mango's only goal in life is to grow bigger and bigger and give mango fruits to all of us. So similarly, a wise person, as his or her knowledge increases, she becomes a source of knowledge for others and a nourishment for others. So that is called the God seed. Then it says it is achintyo yam. It is not knowable. It cannot be known. So talking about knowing, I just come to the bottom of this page. We talk about pramana. Pramana means of knowledge. Even though in Hindi or other languages, pramana is used as proof. But in Sanskrit, when they say pramana, what they mean is a means of knowledge. So in this world, how can we know anything? It's amazing. Our rishis organized and described everything so beautifully. So he said there are only six means of knowledge. So this is an important point. So please pay attention. If you want, you can make notes. But there are only six ways I can know anything on this world. Anything. Only six means. There is no other. So the first is called pratyaksha. Pratyaksha means what I can see. Or what I can hear. So they say, if I see it only, I believe it. So what I can see or hear or taste or smell or touch. So pratyaksha is what is visible to my senses. Then the second one is anuman. Anuman means inference. So for example, behind the hills, I see smoke. So you say, where there is smoke, there is fire. So there is a fire going on, especially on the way to LA sometimes in the summer, you know, you see a lot of smoke and you assume, yes, the hills are on fire. I haven't seen the fire, but when they say where there is smoke, there is fire. So in the past, I have seen, yes, when there is smoke, it creates fire. So when I see fire, even though I don't see, when I see smoke, even though I don't see fire, I assume. So that is called inference. But that also depends on seeing. I have sometime in the past seen it, then I know it. Then it's called upaman. Upaman is say a new iPhone comes out, i10. So they say, how is it different from the other one? So they say, well, a lot of the features are common. It has this, it has this, it has this, but these are the improved features. That it has a better camera, it's a faster speed, more memory. So it's a comparison. This it was, and this is not. Or, you know, a child, they'll say, you know, I remember my teacher, she used to always tell us, no matter how good you are, if you had an older brother or sister in the class, you are gone. She said, your brother, he was so nice, and look at you. You know, to make us all behave, she said, tera bhai itna achcha tha, and what happened to you? So that is comparison. Your brother was good, but you are not that good. So that way you have to say, you know, my brother was like that, then I should also be better. So that is called upamana, comparison. Then there is fourth is arthapatti. That is cause and effect. So like if I see a mango tree, then there must have been a mango seed which created that mango. Or if there's a child, then you say, yeah, there must have been parents. There must have been a father and a mother because of which the child. Or if you see a beautiful painting, they say, who made this painting? And then you go at the bottom and see the name of the artist. You say, okay, so that is cause and effect. So if there is an effect, there must be a cause. Nothing, no effect appears without a cause. The fifth is anupalabdhi. Like say we are all here today, but say tomorrow if Satish Bhai is not here next Sunday, then people will say, what happened? Where is he? He's not in the class. So by absence, so that is the fifth way. Okay, all of us are here, but one person is missing. So that is called anupalabdhi. And then the sixth method of knowing is shabda praman, which is knowledge given to us by the scriptures and by the teacher. So that is how in the world, anything you need to know, these are the only six methods. So this teaching does not only have to be spiritual, but see, I have never seen a kangaroo. I have never been to Australia. So when I'm a child, so they show us a picture of a kangaroo. This is how kangaroo looks like, okay? And this is how he jumps, and this is how tall he is. All those things the book can tell us, but the book cannot show us the kangaroo. I cannot hold or touch that kangaroo. I can see it. So these are the six methods in the world to know anything you want. Any means of knowledge all falls under this category. Anything you want to know, our rishis have said, there's only six ways. Either you know it yourself, or you infer, or you comparison, cause and effect, absence, and the book knowledge or the scriptures or the any other books. But the word, so shabda means word. So either oral teaching by a teacher or scriptures. So can all these six methods apply to Atma, the consciousness? Can I see it myself, pratyaksha? No, I cannot see it. I cannot even know it. I cannot hear about it. I cannot think about it. So it is not pratyaksha. Is it anuman? Can I infer that just as if there is smoke, there is fire? No, there is no inference. There is nothing I can infer with. How can I compare it? No, there is, compared to God or Atma, there is nothing that can compare. Nothing on this universe, nothing that I have known can give me a comparison. Can I say cause and effect? They say, of course, you know, God was there and he's the cause and there came the universe. Okay, that I agree that there is a universe, but in this universe, is there anything that looks like God? For example, there is a clay pot. Now in the pot, even though the pot is colored, you know that yes, there is clay. And I can see, you know, I can see that there was a cause called clay and the effect is pot. Or gold, I see there is a lump of gold and then the goldsmith takes and makes it into an ornament. So the cause is visible to me, is known to me, and the effect is similar to the cause. But this world is not similar to that Lord or the consciousness. And even though the Lord is in all of us, we are not able to see him, we are not able to know them, because there is nothing in common. This world is an illusion, is a projection, and the consciousness supports it, But the consciousness itself is not involved in the creation. God says, I am not involved. The whole creation is in me. But when the creation is born and the creation dies, I am not affected. So there is no. So through cause and effect, we cannot know. Yes, we know there is a cause, but what is the cause? We are not able to detect by our senses. How about absence? Can you detect God by absence? No, because God is never absent. This Atma, this consciousness within me, right now it is present in all of us. Even when our body perishes, the Atma is never absent. The consciousness is never. So none of these five methods can give us knowledge about this. He said, how about Shabda Praman? The scriptures, don't the Upanishads tell us how God is? Don't the Bible tell us? The Quran tells us. The great prophets, whether it's Buddha or Shankaracharya or Jesus, you know, they all have given us either through oral or through writings. So I heard a very beautiful example. So they say, like here, of course, it doesn't rain, but suppose you go to Seattle and in the morning you read the, you know, the weather forecast, and they say there will be 5 inches of rain. So the newspaper you have in your hand, and it says there will be 5 inches of rain today. So it can tell us about rain, but if I squeeze the paper, will I get even a drop of water? No. The paper only can tell me about rain, but cannot introduce me to rain, cannot take me to rain. It can only tell me about rain. Yes, there will be 6 inches of rain today, so you'd better take your umbrella when you go to work. So same way, these scriptures, they tell me about God. They introduce me to God. They tell me who God is. They tell me what God does, where God is. But I cannot get God. I cannot obtain God. They cannot make me realize God. All they can do is show me the path, just as when you squeeze the newspaper, no water can come out. So when you squeeze these Upanishads, you will get the knowledge. Yes, knowledge is very necessary. Without knowledge, I cannot reach that Lord, the consciousness. So whether it's a guru or whether it's the scriptures, they give me the knowledge, but ultimately I myself have to get up and go. I cannot just, people just sometimes just worship the book. Oh, you know, this is a holy book. It was given to us by God. And they just put it on a, you know, in the temple and put a cloth on it and worship. That's very good. But it should not be left to just worship. The books are not meant to be worshipped. They are meant to be followed. The prophets did not say, put or the prophet himself will make a big statue about God of this, whether it's Mahavir or Buddha or Shankaracharya or Krishna, and we make a statue and we every day bow down and pray. That's good, but you should, that's not enough. You don't only need to bow down to Krishna, you need to follow what Krishna is telling us in the Gita. You don't only need to go and prostrate to Jesus or kneel down, but follow the Jesus's words, what commandments, what his sermon on the mount, what he talked about. Otherwise, we're just, oh, Mahavir, he was such a great, are Mahavir, what he said, are you following that? That is the whole idea of these scriptures. So Shabda Praman is knowledge, but knowledge that we need to apply in our life. So these are the 6 ways that Atma we can try to know. Talking about knowledge, this highway patrol guy found this car going in the freeway at 22 miles an hour on the freeway. And so he put his lights and stopped it. And there was this old lady driving and 3 of her friends. He says, ma'am, you are driving too slow. She says, what do you mean too slow? He says, I clocked you 22 miles an hour. He said, yeah, that's the speed limit. Look, it's highway 22. No, she didn't say highway 22. He says, it says 22. So I'm driving 22. That's the speed limit. So he says, madam, no, 22 is not the speed limit. 22 is the just the name of the highway. It doesn't mean you have to drive 22. She says, oh, okay. Then he looks at the other 3, and all the other 3 ladies are, look, it's white, and they're, you know, holding on to the seat, and they're like scared. He says, why are they looking so scared? She says, oh, they'll be okay in a while. I just got off highway 125. So the right knowledge is very important. Otherwise, you don't know what to do in this world. So that's why they say that the right knowledge is required. And then we have talked about different examples that the telescope can see the world but cannot see the knower. So similarly, the intellect cannot see the consciousness, but through the consciousness, through the intellect, illumines the world. Or they give an example of a flashlight. Like in a flashlight, if the room is completely dark and I turn on the flashlight, with the light, I can see everything in the room. I can see the chair, I can see the fan, but I cannot. But somebody says, what is the battery inside you have? Is it ever ready or is it Duracell? So I take out the battery and then I put it in front of the flashlight. You cannot. The flashlight cannot illumine the battery because the flashlight is illumined by the battery. The energy of the battery is illumining. The moment you take the battery out, the flashlight cannot work. So the moment the consciousness stops working, you and I cannot function in the world. So just as the flashlight cannot see the battery, you and I cannot see the consciousness that illumines us. So how do we do? What do I do? They say, quieten your mind in your meditation. As we sit for meditation, you quieten your mind becomes still. And in the silence of that meditation, you can know the knower. You can know the consciousness. So when they say your mind becomes still, then the Lord or the consciousness reveals himself. So what they are saying is, do not objectify. You know, I want to know consciousness. I want to know God. I want to see him. Even though in our Puranas, they describe somebody was meditating for many years and God appeared. But that is symbolic. The realization that happens when a person understands this knowledge and applies that is the discovery of the Lord's presence within. And not only discovery, but constant abidance, constant contact with the Lord. So such a person never loses sight of that divinity and constant knowledge that that is my higher nature and God and I are one. So such a person functions as the Lord himself because he has realized that that divinity is me, which you and I, we are striving to realize. But that is how we study the lives of great saints or Mahatmas who don't objectify. You cannot objectify this knowledge, objectify Lord, but understand that I am Atman. We always say, okay, God is so great and this Atma is immutable, this Atma is was never born, will never die, is always present, it was there, it is Sanatana, it is Avyaya, it is Ajam and all that. We have to change it to I am eternal. I was never born. I will never perish. I am eternal. I will always be there. My body may perish, but I, the consciousness. So what that does is removes your grief. Because Arjuna, that's why he says, Na anushochitum arhasi. He says, there is no need to grieve. Yes, death will happen. But if you think you are this body, yes, you should go ahead and grieve. But if I am the Atma, the consciousness, then what is to grieve? If I drop the body, so what? I'll take a new body. My body is old. We had talked about a few weeks ago. Vasamsi jirnani yata vihai. Just as a person gives up old clothes and takes on new jacket, so similarly, I gave up this old body and take up this new body. So that understanding when you have, then there is no need to mourn, no need to cry. So what Krishna is doing is giving us this highest knowledge, and this knowledge will be repeated as I mentioned. So at this moment, it's something, I don't know, I don't think I am that. It's okay, even if you don't think you are that, and if you think you are the body, Bhagwan will address it in the next verse. So any questions? Any comments?
Yes. Anuplabdhi is similar to not achieving something or the failure.
Anuplabdhi here means absence. Anuplabdhi can also be used as, yeah, absolutely right, as inability to achieve. But anuplabdhi here means it is not upalabdh. It is not available for my visible. Like this, suppose next week he doesn't come, then I say he is anuplabdh. I cannot see him. So anuplabdhi means it is not available for my vision at this moment or for my, but yeah, anuplabdhi also in Sanskrit can also be used as something I could not achieve. Yes. But here that's not the context.
It's understanding of not there.
Yes.
I don't know German. So I understand that it's not German. That is anuplabdhi. So it's my ignorance about something or it's absence of
that. Absence of knowledge. Yes. Absence of
person,
knowledge.
Absence of a thing, absence of a knowledge.
Right.
So it's not that it's bad, but I don't know Germany. I haven't really there. I haven't learned that. So, but that I know that I don't know that is.
Right. Yes. Thank you. Good question. Any other comments? Yes.
I think I've been reading Eckhart Tolle, and he talks a lot about consciousness.
Yes.
And what I'm getting from it is that you can, I guess, I'm going to use the word see, but that's not it. And people have different levels of consciousness. You can kind of tell, like I'm looking at Swami Chinmayananda, and he has got so much consciousness. And then you look at people like the white supremacists who have very little consciousness. And so is that one way of, so, and I don't know how that fits in, but somehow it seems to fit in.
I think the word consciousness is used in different context. One is, as we said, consciousness is immutable, it's unchangeable. So there cannot be more in somebody and less in somebody. And it's not that I have less consciousness now. When I become like Swami Chinmayananda, I will have more consciousness. So the consciousness, in as you understand it as life principle, is one and it is immutable. When they talk about the consciousness improving, it is their understanding of the subject and then they're applying in their life. So the knowledge, how much you have understood and how much you have applied, that is where they say, oh, he's more conscious or he's less conscious of this knowledge. So where you apply that, that determines your level of consciousness. But it's not the changing in the level of the, it's not the life principle that changes. It is our understanding of the scriptures and then application. So the context in which it is being used, it's like somebody is unconscious and then you give him some medicine and he wakes up. You say, oh, now he's more conscious. He was unconscious, then slowly he's half awake, and then you give him some more medicine and he's back to normal from a coma in ICU. Now he's back. So then we say, oh, he was unconscious and now he's conscious. But that is a different consciousness. The same word can be used in different context depending on. Yes. Thank you.
I would like to add here.
Yes.
Reading of Bhagavad Gita, as we read Bhagavad Gita and the verses, at first we may not understand it because we may not relate to it.
Right.
And then with our own experience, if we come back to it after a week having certain experiences, and if those experiences matches the words that Shri Krishna Bhagavan is talking about, and then we'll say, oh yeah, I can relate to it now and I can understand it more clearly because I had experience and I can now understand this.
Yes.
And then
right, absolutely. So yeah, that's what my experience too, the same scripture, having read it many years back, now when I'm reading it, because we had done this 18 chapters once, and a lot of the things to me still come across new, because you always get new ideas. So yeah, that's what the repeated reading of the scriptures will give you, a more and clearer understanding. Thank you very much. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha. Sarve santu niramaya, sarve bhadrani pasyantu, ma kaschid dukkha bhavet. Om shanti shanti shantihi, harihi om shri gurubhyo namaha, harihi om.